File 1, No Adverts, from audiobooksforfree.com.
The Life of the Buddha, by L. Adams Beck. Part 1. Chapter 1. Thus have I heard. Nearly 2,500 years ago, in the city of Kapila, in northern India, the spring came with glory. And surely, nowhere in all the three worlds is spring more gracious, for the sunshine, life-giving, inspiring, draws divine scent from moist earth, and the deep luxuriance of leaves and flowers to send on every breathing breeze pure incense from the world, rejoicing as a bride in the all-enfolding delight. Here stood the little city of Kapila, nobly placed, as beseems the birthplace of the Perfect One. And above it, the Himalayas stormed the skies with tossing billows of snow, leading the aspiration of man on and up until it melted in the divine. On these, as was known, the divinities had their dwelling. Thence Indra, the heavenly lord, drove his flocks of clouds to pasture in the pure air, taking form and colour from the splendours of the sun and the moon and the silvery embroidery of the constellations. Veya, lord of the winds, charged in thunder or breathed in music from awful heights of the snow. Surya, the sun, urged his golden steeds from the low horizon to the zenith and on to the confines of night. Chandra, the moon, rose on the crest of the mighty range and sank below it into his mysterious kingdom in the darkening west. The deep pine forest, clothing the lower spurs and veiling the sources of the rivers, must surely have had their indwelling spirits. And the river, Rohindi, breaking Lightfoot from the heights to scatter her diamonds as she leapt from rock to rock, or brooded a moment in deep pools, mirroring her ferns and flowers. What was she but a lovely living nymph, a dancer, pure as the silver peaks that fathered her? Therefore, let it be known that this city was set amongst celestial influences, that the gates of paradise of India were not far from it, and the four celestial kings were its wardens. And it dwelt at this time in great peace. The city and surrounding country, a part of the great kingdom of Kosala, were inhabited by the Sakya. Very great was the kingdom of Kosala. The vast and holy city of Benares, 100 miles south from Kapila, was but one of its cities, and its capital, Savatthiya, lay in the cloudy mountains of Nepal. To the southeast lay the kingdom of Magda, and only the great gods then knew to which of these kingdoms would fall the scepter of India. And peaceful was the city of Kapila, the city of red earth, home of the Sakya clansmen, a race strong and high, for they were of the Arya, the noble people, and it was they who, descending into India through the passes, had conquered the dark men of the land, and driven them before them like the shadows of night fleeing before the arrows of dawn. And having disposed the dark-skinned, the lawless, the godless, the fair-skinned noble people entered in upon their lands and made them theirs. With them, the noble people brought the gods of heaven and earth, and these they worshipped with sacrifice and ritual, chanting of mantra, and offerings of cows and grain and ghee, and all the savours dear to hovering divinity. And in peace and plenty, their Maharaja ruled them. Very fair was the city of the banks of bright Rohini. As there were few men of arrogant, dominant riches, so was there no piercing poverty. And since life was simple, all had enough. The streets were clean swept and watered. The parks and gardens lay about them, where might men shelter in the great heat. And the gay, golden-skinned children played beside the river, and grew sleek and round on their food of pure rice and plantains, and milk from the deep dew-lapped cattle that wound home in the evening from high pastures by running water. Nor was their fare only for the body. Wise men, the wanderers, they whose minds are fixed on things unearthly, and whose souls climb towards keen stars, as the cragsman follows the eagle to her eyrie above the clouds, came in from mighty forests, where the hermits and their families dwell in peace with God and man, pursuing the purities of the householder's life in the wilds, bringing with them the dreams, the speculations, the conclusions of the hermit and themselves. And for such the Raja had made a hall of cedar wood in the city, where they might hold disputations with its wise men, and the simpler folk sit and listen, bestowing applause or condemnation as they heard. For there were none in the city, gentle or simple, noble or humble, but set the things of the spirit above the chaffer of the marketplace, and lent a ready ear to such talk. Nor did they fear to speak, for the Aryan are free peoples, coming from the north, and bold and adventurous. And of these wanderers the people learnt much, for if the clansmen were free, these were freer. No love of earthly homes or riches held them. Strip one of them of his worldly all, his tattered robe and bowl for alms, and he would depart content, smiling his strange secret smile, as a man whose treasure is beyond thief or destroyer. But for the Wassa, the 3 months' rainy season, they would stay, willing to speak or to hear, satisfied with very little, and when the sun shone again, depart, like migrating birds on their mysterious way. And sometimes would come one God-intoxicated, utterly heedless of men, scarcely emerging from samadhi, the mystic ecstasy, and him would men surround with mute envy, because in that trance he beheld things not lawful, nor possible to be uttered. And such would stay but a little while, and then, heedless of rain or sun or wind or snow, press on to the cold glories of the mountains, alone and in haste, and reappear no more. So does the flame of the divine draw the moth of the spirit of man to hover about it until, dazzled and drunken with radiance, it joins itself to the flame and is consumed into pure light. Yet was not the talk of the city of Kapila forever of things divine, for bygone rajas, and this one also, knowing that while there is a north man, he must still be talking, and much trouble thereby averted, had made a folk moat, a meeting hall, and not one only, where in the different quarters of the town men might gather and talk of their affairs, the farmers, the handicraftsmen alike, the sowing, the harvesting of rice, the well-doing of cattle, the doings of the Kosalans, of whom they themselves were a clan, the subjugation of the swarthy natives, among whom they lay as pearls in a black ocean, the ambitions of the kings of Mazda, the trading of the merchants, and many things more which concerned them nearly. And each householder had the right to be heard, for each in his own house was king and priest, and there none might say him nay, were it not that the Brahmins made or unmade his peace with the Lord of Heaven through gifts and sacrifices, and a ritual grown exceedingly heavy and burdensome. But against these, even the fair-skinned people, the Eria, as they called themselves, did not as yet dare to murmur. The women of Kapila also were wives and mothers of free men. Their faces were not veiled, save when they themselves, for modesty, chose to draw the folds between themselves and too bold a gaze. They shared the joys and sorrows of their men, though the great ladies were screened. And if they walked in the ways of ritual piety even more easily, and laid daily gifts even more precious at the feet of the Brahmins, this is the way of women all the world over. And these happy people had a good Maharaja named Sudhodana, or Pure Rice, because not only were his granaries and those of his fathers before him full to overflowing, but his heart was pure as the grains of living pearl. A man grave and kind, rich also in cattle and elephants, yet not arrogant with riches, charitable, almsgiving, reverencing the Brahmin and the ascetic, walking in peace in the way of ancient pieties, with thoughts of his own to think as he raised his eyes to the mountains, awful in the heavens as intermediaries between men and gods. And he had taken to wife two fair sisters, the elder Maya, the younger Prajapati, and by the elder, the more dearly loved, had as yet no child, and by neither a son to succeed him on his peaceful seat of rulership. And this was a grief to him, for when he was gone, who should sacrifice to his soul and the souls of the great dead fathers? Very sweet and grateful is the tenderness of daughters, but this they cannot do. And one day, as they sat in the pleasure pavilion beside the waters of Rohini, listening to her song of the snow as she danced onward, downward from the heights, the Maharaja, Suddhodana, opened his heart once more to his wives. And one, Maya the Maharini, sat at his feet on a cushion of silk woven with gold, and her beauty was calm as the evening star, shining in a faint moonlight, luminous, remote, veiled with dreams and hopes unknown to others. The second queen, Prajapati, was fair and gentle and no more. Yet that is much, as shall be shown. And these two were sisters in heart, as in blood and wifehood. So, laying his hand on the head of Maya, the Maharaja spoke softly.
What dreams, my queen?
And she, pointing to the bamboo grove, where stood in green shade a deer and her fawn beside her, said with a slim hand clasping her sister's, of motherhood, of this I dream, night and day, knowing many beautiful things, but most of all this, that the heart of my Lord, my beloved, cannot rest until a son of his is laid in his arms. Oh, would, if I am barren, that my heart's sister, my Prajapati, might give our husband this gift of gifts. And he, with heavy brows,
dear lady and wife, the gods give and withhold their great gift of life at pleasure. What have we left undone? We have besought them. We have offered of our best on many an altar. We have fed Brahmins. We have kept the precepts. And yet they do not give. If in some former life we have sinned, yet who can tell? It is their will, and must be born, even if it break my heart.
Then Prajapati, raising her sweet eyes timidly to him, her hand clasping her sister's, if my lord please to take another wife, then indeed my sister and I will serve her. And if a son is born, what can we but rejoice? And he,
that son would not be the child of my queens, and most of all of Maya, the great lady. Dear he might be, but not so dear. And moreover, you both, my ladies, have heard the word of the wandering Rishi, the wise ascetic, who prophesied that in this city, in this fortunate palace, should a child be born, a ruler of men, a king among kings.
May it be here and now, said the Lady Maya. And again, softly, may we be found worthy. There was a long silence, and only Rohini, the river, talked of sweet secret things as she went her way. And presently, The Maharaja added,
I think it will not be.
And a large tear pearled itself on the long lashes of Prajapati and spilt down the bloom of her cheek as she watched her baby daughter in the arms of a dark-skinned nurse, lulling her to sleep with strange and wistful songs of the native people by the lotuses on the great marble tank in the shade of the pipalas. And presently the evening came, gliding with silent steps through the woods and along the waters, veiled as a maid who steals to meet her star-eyed lover. And having beheld the pomps of sunset, the mountains withdrew into their mysteries, and a star stood on each of their summits for guard. And in a great peace the moon floated upwards, resplendent. Then the beauty of heaven and earth became marvellous and remote, and the earth was no longer for men, but gods. Now, that night, Maya, the great lady, asleep beside her lord in the pleasure pavilion, when moonlight blanched the dewy lawns to snow, dreamed a dream. Nor was it the first. This lady was vision-haunted. Her eyes, her ears, were open to all the starry influences, to all the weeping of winds, and the tales the reeds whispered to one another in lonely places. But this dream came, not flitting ghostly along the ways of sleep, nor with the morning dissolving cloud-like, elusive, scarcely to be grasped or recorded, more a feeling than a thought, but clear, majestic, terrible and beautiful, so that she found herself, and knew not how, sitting up, awake, aware, breathless, as it were a queen to whom had been made a great annunciation from equal powers. And with an awakening hand laid upon her husband, she spoke, nor did her voice tremble. Beloved, awake, I have dreamed. For it seemed to me that the four guardian divine kings lifted me from my bed, and bore me away to the great mountains, and laid me down. And heavenly spirits, shining as stars, came about me, and bathed me in the pure waters of a mountain lake, freeing me of all human stain. And when this was done, they laid me down again, clothing me in the gold of divine garments, and shedding perfumes about me. And I saw a lordly elephant, white as silver, wandering beneath the trees. For, as you know, this is the symbol of royalty. And, touching me on the right side with his trunk, he appeared to melt into a cloud and pass, as a vapor, into my womb. In the darkness, I have seen a great light shine, and in the air myriads of radiant spirits sang my joy. And oh, beloved, all is well. And he, stammering, amazed. Beloved, when you awakened me, the music of these very spirits rang in my ears, and they cried to me with voices more tunable than all the songs of birds or harmony of well-touched lutes.
The child shall be born when the flower star shines in the east. And as you touched me, I awoke.
And more they could not say, but clung to each other, trembling for joy and wonder. Nor could any sleep come to them that night, for in their gladness it seemed they stood on the shining shores of heaven, its light about them like an ocean. And when, on the morrow, these dreams were told to Prajapati, she rejoiced with them, no thought of envy to cloud the crystal of her soul. And when they were laid before the dream readers, they could presage nothing but good. And, being called in before the Maharaja, where he sat in state with his Maharinis, they spoke as follows. A lord of men shall be born, a great and awful ruler. Let the soul of the Maharaja be exalted, and the heart of the Maharini rejoice and triumph, since to their house is given a son, whose kingdom is the earth and the fullness of it. Then the Maharaja shouted for joy, while Naya, the Maharini, listened with dreaming eyes. For he shall conquer the earth, he cried, and the trampling of his elephants be heard like thunder, and the Kosala shall be his kingdom, and Maghada prostrate before his feet, and the riches and glory shall be the slaves of the conqueror for ever and ever. And the Maharini said, for ever and ever. Yet there is death. And Prajapati hid her face. And the dream readers, looking up with reverence, where they knelt before their diagrams and circles, answered, great lady, there are riches that death cannot feed. There are conquests that time does not triumph over. There is an empire that passes not away. What the fate of this child is to be, we cannot yet tell. It bewilders us, for great and auspicious are the signs, and they are not plain reading, as is the custom. It may be that the child shall be a sage, dominating the souls of men, ruling by pure wisdom. A conqueror, but here the Maharaja broke in anger. Be silent, for this I will not have. The men of my race are Kshatriyas, warriors. The Brahmin, the ascetic, the hermit have their sacred uses, and may the guardian god forbid that I should disparage their merit. But my son is my son, and a warrior. And if the signs are great, it is a warrior's greatness I claim for him, for in my family is no other known or considered. But still the dream readers lingered in doubt. Great sir, there is more to be told, strange and very wonderful. Two ways lie before the child to be, and in which he will walk, we cannot say. If, when he is of age to judge, he beholds a sick man, an old man, a dead man, and a holy monk, then great and wide is his kingdom, but not of this world. And if he sees not these signs, he shall be a king of the earth, magnificent in riches, glory, and power.
Therefore, it is in the hand of his father to choose what he shall see or not see. The dream is read. Gladly and gloriously is it read, shouted the Maharaja. No such sights shall my son see. Leave spiritual things to spiritual men, for he shall reign for ever and ever.
And bowing, with minds perplexed, the dream readers gathered up their calculations and departed. And in the city they spread their news, and there was scarcely a man that thought and rejoiced with the Maharaja, commending him in that he chose rather to have a son to fight beside him and ride terribly at his bridle rein than an ascetic in the woods with matted hair and clawed hands to pray for his victories.
So would we all choose, like men, they said.
And very joyful was the city. But Nela, the great lady, saying little, went her way in peace, strong and calm of purpose, as our general mother, the earth, pure within and without, as the white lotus, and surrounding herself with a great tranquillity, she floated on its surface as a water lily, rooted in the life-giving bosom of earth, turning an adoring face to the purities of the heavens and absorbing their radiance until her heart was pure gold and her body white as the ivory of the flower that is a prayer embodied and throne of all the gods. And if she passed through the city, the women and children strewed flowers before her as before a goddess born in procession. And when the benediction of her eyes fell on them, they prostrated themselves. And always her sister Prajapati went beside her, guarding her with her own hands, treasuring her as a thing already enskied and sainted, a fear in her heart, clasping hands with joy. And then the Maharaja Suddhodani would stride into the pavilion, saying in his great voice,
Wife, how goes it? For the time passes onwards, and soon the spring shall be here again, and with it our boy. This day have the farmers given me a little plough made of red cedar wood, banded with ivory, and when he can walk and talk, he shall plough his furrow like a man.
And she, smiling, answered, Dear Lord, he shall plough his furrow, and sow his seed, and very great shall his harvest be. All goes better than well. And again, another day he came with a sword, the haft sparkling like frost with jewels, and he cried, rejoicing,
This have the goldsmiths and the handicraftsmen of the city given me, that with it my son may strike off the head of the goat for his first sacrifice. And after destroying his enemies, as when Indra thunders and lightens from the peaks. But is all well?
And she smiled. Beloved, his enemies shall fall before him like chaff driven on a gale, and all goes better than well. And she spent her time in deep meditation, free from grief or pain, free also from illusions and desires, in a measureless content and foreseeing. Thus the time went by. not swiftly as a dancer, nor slowly as a mourner, but in a great, quiet pacing with majesty from day to day. Now, on a certain day, when spring with her birds and blossoms has come to earth, the Maharini, following the custom of the ladies of her race, with her sister made ready all her matters, and entered the presence of her husband, speaking thus: "Dear Lord, it is the habit of my people that when our children are born, it is in the house of our parents. Have I then your permission to journey to them for this auspicious birth, that, returning, I may bring my sheaves with me?" And he, embracing her with true affection, gave her leave to go, commanding her to the care of Prajapati, and giving strict command that men should go before, making all the ways clear for her litter, and men and women be warned that no sight, painful or terrifying, should meet her eyes. So, tenderly invoking the prayers and ritual of the Brahmins on her and his son's behalf, he sent her forth and returned to his duties full of thought. But she, born in her litter, and embraced in the very arms of peace, went her way, thinking to reach the house of her parents, and knowing not that the great hour of her life was even then upon her. And passing the Lumbini gardens, where trees and flowers, placid water and green shades, the song of birds and the cooing of doves combined to make a heaven on earth, she commanded them to stay her litter, that she might set her feet in the sun-warmed grass and stand beside the coolness of the lake. So it was done. And leaning on the arm of Prajapati, she descended and entered the garden and wandered a while, silent for joy. And suddenly, as they stood beneath a great salsa tree, sweeping the swards with robes of green and the honeyed snow of blossom, awe and trembling seized her, and a measureless marvelling. And the tree swept its boughs earthward until the leaves and flowers lay thick upon the grass, and she knew that the life of all growing things and of the divine earth and the mountains and skies lived within her, and that her hour was come. She laid her hand on a bough of the salsa tree, and as Prajapati knelt beside her, stilled with joy and fear, and her women crowded outside the close-blossomed shelter of the salsa tree, her son was born. Not such a human birth with agony, but painless. Now it was told afterwards that for wardens the four heavenly kings stood about him, and that the air was thronged with those birds of heaven, the happy, shining ones, singing and rejoicing. And it is told that throughout the world all polluted streams flowed clear as crystal, and that even as the lady, his mother, suffered no pangs of childbirth, so all sentient creatures knew surcease of pain because of that great birth, and rejoiced with her in jungle and meadow, in deep waters and in clouds aerial. For what mother or child could sorrow in that hour?